From KCRW in Santa Monica and KCRW.com, I'm Kim Masters, and this is The Business.
You listen and learn, then you're going to be able to do anything you want in this town.
Everybody thinks show business is really, really all right.
Life. What's with him?
Oh, I'm afraid he's gone Hollywood.
This week on The Business, two recent films, Duplicity and State of Play, scored underwhelming results at the box office, and they instantly became emblematic of a perceived trend in Hollywood. But the producer of State of Play claims big-budget studio movies for grown-ups aren't dead yet. Plus, how do you rake in the biggest April opening in box office history? Just drop the thes. At least that's what Universal did with Fast and Furious, the sequel to The Fast and the Furious. But first, what's next for Tom Cruise? That and more in the Hollywood News Banter. It's The Business from KCRW.
You can imagine Hollywood, everything is really driven by
making money.
What's with him?
Oh, I'm afraid he's gone to Hollywood.
I'm joined in the studio by The Business producer, Matt Holzman.
Let's start with the fact that nearly a year after their last contract expired, the Screen Actors Guild finally made a theatrical deal with producers. Not only that, but the union itself is planning to lay off about 35 workers to help close a $6.5 million deficit in the union's fiscal 2009 budget. I don't think those two things are related in any way.
But there's a certain irony in that.
Yes, indeed.
Yes, the SAG non-strike, a long and fruitless endeavor.
Right, so they didn't get anything more or less than the other guilds, but what they did finally get was to have their contracts synced up with the other unions, so the next cycle they'll all be hopefully bargaining together instead of piecemeal.
Yeah, and if there's anything left of the industry, they can then fight for it really hard.
In more salacious news, Sam Haskell, the former head of television at William Morris, is releasing a memoir called Promises I Made My Mother.
I will never become an agent? That would be a good promise.
the book is coming out just in time for the rumored William Morris Endeavor merger. And according to the press release, it outlines how his mother, Mary Haskell, stands out as both a woman and a parent, and which lessons proved most useful on the journey from small-town Mississippi to Hollywood. But of course, everyone in Hollywood is abuzz about the nasty things he says about current William Morris head Jim Wyatt.
Yes, I think we should first of all say that the rumored William Morris Endeavor agency merger, which I believe, Matt, did you not wager against that?
I did, and I'm eating crow as we speak.
Yes, I believe that one will happen.
It's little butter, little garlic.
Is.
Yeah.
And really is another, a sign of the desperate times in this industry that these two agencies, I think, feel that they must merge. Now, Sam Haskell, the former head of television at William Morris, as I understand it, Sam Haskell is gearing up to run for some sort of political office in small town Mississippi, which he chronicles the journey from. Now he has to get the journey back to small town Mississippi and purge himself of the taint of evil Hollywood. So Promises I Made My Mother, it sounds like a big down payment on the on trying to rebuild the image as something other than a flesh peddler here in Tinseltown.
And that is something I will not argue against, because I think you're absolutely right. Elsewhere, Michael Fleming wrote a fascinating story in Variety entitled Script Doctors In for Tom Cruise. He outlines the millions of dollars in rewrite fees that the studios are spending on scripts that may or may not become the next Tom Cruise movie. While everyone else in Hollywood seems to be cutting back, the script doctors are reportedly pulling down as much as $250,000 a week. And I think it's worth noting that the last time Tom Cruise had a big hit was in 2006 with Mission Impossible 3. So,
yes, I spoke to a producer yesterday who was speculating that piece may have been somewhat planted because, we're at a time when movie stars are not beginning to even dream about commanding the kind of fees they commanded before. And Tom Cruise is really high up on that list because aside from just being a big star at a time when people don't pay for big stars, he's a big star with a little bit of an asterisk next to his name because he kind of spun out with, jumping up and down on Oprah's couch, et cetera.
So he's basically making the case of why he's going to take a cheaper amount.
Yeah, I think he's taking a cheaper quote and he's telling, you can get a great deal on Tom Cruise right now if you come up with the right movie. So it's worth spending a little money to come up with that script and get that name at bargain prices.
Gotcha. Finally, the now infamously irate actor Christian Bale has joined the cast of David O. Russell's new film, Fighter. Russell was I was going to say, Russell was also caught in a profanity-filled rant on the set of I Heart Huckabees in 2004. George Clooney also reportedly said that the director went ballistic on the set of Three Kings in 1999.
Yes, I believe that was a physical confrontation. And of course, Christian Bale also famously went off on a poor crew member in the upcoming Terminator Salvation. So this is like, what, is it like Ali Frazier now? David O. Russell versus Christian Bale?
I don't know how the movie is going to be, but the stuff that's going to end up on the internet is going to be priceless.
Okay, well, it's all the news that's fit to banter about coming up later in the show. Amazingly Fast and Furious ticket sales for Fast and Furious, in spite of the fact that there are no "thes" in the name. But next, are movies like State of Play all played out? A recent Los Angeles Times article predicted that a low turnout for the Russell Crowe vehicle State of Play, quote, could have wider repercussions, sending the smart adult drama to the sidelines. That's certainly been the talk in Hollywood. A number of high-profile pictures aimed at grown-ups haven't performed well in the last 12 months, and now megastar Russell Crowe has had his butt kicked by teen heartthrob Zac Efron in 17 Again. Crowe's political thriller has become a kind of poster child for the supposed death of expensive adult dramas. We asked Tim Bevan, one of the producers of State of Play, whether he thinks that's a fair assessment.
Well, I'd say three things. Firstly, I've worked in the movie business for 20 years, and there are always cycles in everything. Last year was that you can't have women's movies in the summer, and along came Mamma Mia and Sex and the City and blew that one off the face of the earth. Other times you can't have horror, other times you can't have this. And right now, it's, oh dear, a couple of adult films have come along and haven't quite performed to the level that they should have done. And I dare say, you know, who knows, we're involved in another film, Soloist, which could open to bigger numbers this weekend, and that's the end of that argument. But the second thing is that it's important when making these more adult movies to make them for a cost, for a price, because it is technically more difficult to get a bigger audience into them. And that would probably be a lesson from State of Play. But thirdly, I think that it is, and I think this is probably the most important thing, is that everyone didn't wake up more stupid all of a sudden in America. And it's very important that an adult audience, when these adult movies come along,
right,
go and see them, basically, because if they don't go and see them, then the studios will stop making them. And I also have to say that over the last couple of weekends, there happened to have been very successful teenage movies which had a built-in audience playing in a holiday period that were very adeptly and sensibly marketed by the respective studios.
Right. And what does that mean?
It means that a comparative number between a Zac Efron movie or Hannah Montana to an adult movie there's a big differential, and that it makes an adult movie appear that it's done worse than it actually has.
Which will then lead studio executives to go, oh, now we must jump on that bandwagon.
Yeah, so then, but that's stupid too, isn't it? Is it in terms of distribution?
Has that ever stopped them? Sorry.
No, yeah. But I think it is. We make these sorts of movies. We've made these sorts of movies for the last 20 years, and you've got to go steady as you go, basically. And yes, this one was slightly disappointing. It wasn't like it was a terrible failure. The next one will connect in a different sort of way, I'm sure, and come out fine.
You know, Russell Crowe in this film obviously looks rather plump, bedraggled, he's going to be in Robin Hood, in the next one or one of the next ones.
Yeah.
Do you think we're just at a point where a star like that in a big movie can't step out of what the public expects and be a paunchy, George Clooney did it in Syriana, but I don't know that that was a big commercial success either.
I don't know about that. I think that possibly that's true, but possibly that there are combined things, and possibly the marketing materials. I think one of the things about making these adult movies is you need to spend a lot of time working on the marketing side of the film, and you need to get it very precise, and you need to absolutely deliver to the potential audience what the film's going to be and what the takeaway from the film's going to be. And I'm not sure that we got there as successfully as we should have done on State of Play. because I think when you look at the reviews and the appreciation of Russell's performance and all the rest of it, you know, we're B plus A all the way through. So that says you're in good shape. So I think the traditional way of marketing movies in America is through trailers and TV spots and all the rest of it. And maybe we weren't quite as on message there as we should have been. And maybe we should have spent a little bit longer on it.
Well, it does seem that some of these recent films do look somewhat alike. Body of Lies, The International, you know, it's hard to differentiate. So that's what you're thinking is maybe the issue
here?
Yeah,
I think that. And I think also, I think you want to be very specific about what the takeaway emotional messages of a more serious movie, and that because that you know, in a way it's the subtext of the film, if you like, and it's what you want people to be talking about afterwards, because in these more adult movies you hope people go out to dinner and talk about them, and that's part of the evening's entertainment and appreciation or the rest of it, and you want to indicate to them where and how they might feel afterwards in a very specific way. And I think we might have failed to do that as specifically as we might have done on State of Play.
But do you have to sell these movies, even if they are sort of, if they're serious and emotional, do you still have to lean on your stars so heavily that you can't kind of send that message that you would like to send? Is that the studio's desire?
I actually disagree with that, because I think that star or no star is your marketing should be giving you the takeout emotion. It should be telling you this is what you're going to get when you go in there, and B, this is kind of the sense of what you're going to feel when you come out. And I think the star is a bonus to that. You know, the star just makes that job easier, but you still got to do that as your start out mission statement, if you like, in your marketing.
That's how. But it used to be kind of the opposite, right? You could have stars who would open a phone book if they read it.
Yeah, and I think that times have changed in that way. But stars could open a phone book if they're in the right movie.
If you're just joining us, we're talking to Tim Bevan. He and his partner, Eric Fellner, have made a slew of successful studio pictures, from Bridget Jones' Diary to several Coen Brothers movies to Atonement. But they also produced State of Play, the Russell Crowe political thriller, and it's being seen as a symbol for the death of a certain kind of studio film for adults. You talk about people sort of jumping to conclusions and saying, oh, Miley Cyrus and Zac Efron are bigger movie stars than maybe Russell Crowe and Julia Roberts. Do you find that movies that you want to do are you can't do right now?
I think that we've never not done a film that we really want to do. And I think that if we wanted to spend a huge amount of money on a more adult movie, that would not be a possibility at the moment. But, you know, you cut your cloth according to what you can get with these films. And we've always done that, and we will continue to do so. I mean, the thing about those younger two actors is they are right on the button for their specific audience in a very narrow demographic in the right movie. You know, people like Russell and the big movie stars, they appear in a number of different sorts of genres. And, you know, at the end of the day, the film will still do fine, State of Play. It may not do the huge numbers that everyone was thinking it might do at one point, but it'll still do fine, and that's because Russell's in it. And you put Miley Cyrus in that film, then I don't think anyone's going to see it.
In State of Play, yeah.
You
said you make the movies you want to make. Is there something which you are doing differently now?
You know, traditionally, is we've always cut our cloth. You know, I made Atonement a few years ago, you know, I'd have loved to have had a bit more money to do that, but I didn't, and we cut the cloth accordingly, and the film is great. And
it certainly didn't look cheap.
No, it didn't look cheap, but we worked it out with maybe more precision than we've done on some of these other movies, and the money, you know, with the more limited finance, we used more effectively.
Now, we look
and
at
I think the art of it, actually, is to spend X million dollars less and look like it's still costing Y million dollars.
But having said that, we look at a film like, you know, materials at least, for the film like The Soloist, which we gather is about a $60 million film. How does that cost $60 million?
You know, it costs a bit less than that. But you know,
homeless people in L.A. There's nothing blowing up as far as I know.
No, but you've got two big movie stars in it. It's a beautifully, immaculately made movie, and it feels like a big film.
But that couldn't happen, right? Now, there's not a chance in the world you get to make a film like The Soloist at that price with paying those two stars.
No, so everyone would have to cut their cloth.
Everyone.
Exactly. I think because of the climate, and don't forget, when we started out on these movies, we weren't in the middle of the god-awful economic downturn say all these films have started, you know, 18 months, 2 years ago, is everyone would have to cut their cloth. So the actors would cut their cloth, the director would cut their cloth, you'd cut the shooting time, you'd cut all of the other things, and guess what? The film would probably look exactly the same.
Right. But in this environment, I'm looking at Green Zone, which is your upcoming film you have, which looks, A, rather traditional in terms of cost. Matt Damon, Paul Greengrass, a CIA, you know, set in Iraq, which you're getting out, I think, in December.
Mm-hmm.
So there has to be a certain amount of worry about that at this point.
Yeah, but the thing deliberately of that film, and we haven't even got any materials out there, this is a blistering thriller, and I think that it will cater for the Matt stroke Paul audience. It's an adrenaline run, this movie, and that I think in many ways, actually, it will be easier to market than something like State of Play, which is more complicated.
It will be a Bourne Identity in Iraq, sort of.
You said it.
that's what they're saying in the marketing meetings at Universal.
No, they're not saying that. But obviously, what the Iraq movies have failed to do is mobilize a young audience. And I think that Matt and Paul have given a young audience an enormous amount of entertainment. And I think that that's what we'd hope to do with this film.
Now, you guys make a lot of different, you know, movies, and I'm sort of noting, especially these Coen brother movies. You have one that's underway right now, and you did Burn After Reading, mm-hmm. and they're a very, you know, they're a niche-y kind of thing, but even they have to be affected, right?
I think the thing about Joel and Ethan is they've always cut their cloth. They've always been very good about making their films for a budget. And I think that they're very wise in that respect. And you know, they've had one of the most illustrious and fantastic filmmaking careers in contemporary times. So there's probably quite a lot of to be learned from them.
Okay, let me somewhat reiterate a question I asked earlier, but I don't mean to flog the horse here, but you're talking about rejiggering the way you approach certain films because of this environment. You know,
Everyone's rejiggering all the time. But yeah, you think, well, it's obvious on a more adult movie, you're not going to get a gazillion billion dollars to make it at the moment. So if you want to do it, you better work out a way of making it a bit cheaper. But I'd also like to reiterate, if people want to see adult movies and see them continuing to be made, then they need to go out and support them.
Yeah, I don't know if there's a way to get them to do that without making movies that they just really want to get off their butts and go and see, you know.
I think they, you know, they do want to see. Anybody who's been to see State of Play, all the people who've been to see, it's had excellent exit polls. It's had excellent reviews. So people are having a good time when they go and see it. You know, we'd just like a few more of them to go and see it. Don't wait for the DVD. Go see the movie.
And then I just really, this is sort of off subject a bit, but, you know, the kind of movies you make, these, you know, Bridget Jones Diaries, mm-hmm. and Notting Hill, and, you know, these comedies that people enjoyed so much in the past, at least, and hopefully will continue to. Can you imagine doing those in 3D?
No. Can you imagine watching them in 3D? I can imagine. I mean, we were talking about 3D the other day. I was talking about a mountaineering film that's also very dramatic with somebody. The thrust of it is dramatic. And we were saying, oh, wow, we should do it in 3D because it would be so amazing up the mountain. But then we realized that actually the important side of the movie was people talking to each other in confined spaces, and you'd probably just feel sick watching it in 3D. So I can't imagine making them in 3D.
Tim Bevan and his partner Eric Fellner are London-based producers of a long list of studio films like Love Actually, About a Boy, Bridget Jones's Diary. More relevant to the conversation we just had are their films now in theaters, State of Play and The Soloist. And thank you so much for joining us.
Not at all.
State of Play was a disappointment for Universal. But with Fast and Furious, the studio has a runaway hit. That's coming up after a short break. You're listening to The Business from KCRW. Business, and I'm Kim Masters. In 2001, Universal had a huge hit with a low-budget, high-concept action film, The Fast and the Furious, starring Vin Diesel.
I live my life a quarter mile at a time. For those 10 seconds or less, I'm free.
Go!
In this world, the only thing more dangerous than the risks they take...
Whatever it is you're in on, I want in on it too.
...is the truth.
You a cop?
Fast and the Furious.
Drive safe.
Rated PG-13.
The studio proceeded to make sequels of a sort in 2003 and 2006. And even without the original cast, they did relatively well. So when they reassembled the four actors from the original to make the fourth film in the franchise, they knew they'd make money. But if you remembered The Fast and the Furious, and then you saw posters for Fast and Furious, you might easily have thought the new film was a re-release. The names are obviously easy to confuse, and the key art is, well, let's just say evocative of the original. But the question of whether the campaign was evocative or confusing was answered earlier this month when Fast and Furious had the biggest domestic April opening ever. The film has so far grossed more than $280 million worldwide. Adam Fogelson is the president of marketing and distribution for Universal Pictures. Congratulations. Fast and Furious.
Thank you.
A $70 million dollar plus opening weekend.
Indeed.
And not at a time of year when people would expect such a huge opening.
No, it certainly, based on past history, there was no automatic reason to believe it was possible.
The movie looks and, you know, at a glance, if you look at the one sheet, if you look at the actors, it looks so much like the original The Fast and The Furious that some people, I think, including my producer here and my husband, were confused.
We didn't necessarily think that consumers were going to be confused. We did think that there would be some people who would giggle at us over removing the "the"s from the original title and representing this to the marketplace. We believe that consumers would rejoice at what would be the first true sequel to the original film.
Because the other two sequels did not have the original talent.
Correct. We believe that that's how consumers would process it. We believe that the addition of the tagline, new model, original parts, did all of the work necessary to let our audience know that this was not us re-releasing the original, but rather bringing a true sequel to the marketplace. And we were comfortable letting people in the industry giggle at us a little bit if they thought that removing the "does" from the first title, seemed silly. That was okay. We had pretty good evidence that the audience we were intending to appeal to actually was rejoicing in it.
How do you get that evidence?
You test your materials both quantitatively and qualitatively. And then you begin to see what's happening when the material goes out into the marketplace. And all of the early evidence, when we tested it, and then when we released the first trailer, I believe in November of last year, and we had people in theaters across the country reporting back, and we saw it for ourselves because we went out to view it as well. There was a palpable, audible excitement in the theaters about the reteaming of this cast. And I think the way it was presented throughout the campaign, but particularly with that first trailer, really kind of ignited a big powder keg of interest.
Since you've been proved correct, can you tell us, was there a discussion internally when this was conceived where somebody said, this just looks so much like the original? What if people think it's a re-release? Did that conversation happen?
No, I think what happened is that when we saw the audience reaction to Vin's appearance in the third film, it confirmed what many of us had believed here all along, which is that people really did want to see this cast back together. So I can tell you, for example, that the first trailer that went out, when we were conceptualizing the film and talking about making this film, that trailer was in all of our minds before they went and shot the movie. And we believe that that opening action sequence from the film, which was the opening action sequence of the first trailer, was going to make people say, oh my goodness, they've brought the original cast back together. That action reminds me of the first, but has been done in an even bigger and better way, and we can't wait to see it. And fortunately, having the conversation now a couple weeks after it's open, I can say it as though we actually knew what we were talking about.
Yeah, that's always good.
It helps.
So you just deliberately from the get-go said, let's evoke that first movie.
100%, yes.
Everybody will get that it's a different movie, even though the title is so similar.
Yes.
Because I have to say, I personally looked and said, well, where's the numeral?
We couldn't really call it The Fast and the Furious 2 because we had done Too Fast, Too Furious as the sequel. And if you accept the premise that this was the first true sequel to the original, if you gave it a numeral, it would be a 2. So we needed to find something else. And again, we genuinely believed that there would be no confusion. And I have to say, I think people tend to underestimate just how much of a national and frequently, certainly in this case, an international obsession what's happening in the world of movies can be. When you get to opening day, particularly of a big and highly anticipated film, there is so much conversation about what movies are opening this weekend and what are they, separate and apart from all the time and money and energy that's spent by the studio that's releasing a film to get people to know it. So many programs, so many shows, so many publications, so many online sites focusing on what are the movies coming this weekend and how are they going to do, that it makes for a movie like this, the actual chances that people won't get this is a new movie, I think virtually impossible. When your cast is doing the publicity tour, when they're on all the programs, when television shows and newspapers and magazines and online sites are talking about the new Fast and Furious movie that opens this Friday, I think the odds that we had miscalculated were relatively slim, even though I completely understand on an intellectual level why people were asking the question.
And now you said you were willing to be teased for just losing the in
yep.
the title. Did anybody actually tease you?
Oh, sure. It was everywhere and anywhere.
When you were like lunching at the commissary or something?
Oh, anybody. Sure. When Jay Leno had Vin on, I think he must have made 6 jokes about it before Vin actually walked out on stage. In this particular case, we knew very early on. It was a lot easier to smile with people when they were joking because we genuinely believed we had lightning in a bottle for a second time. Couldn't have dreamt it would be to this level, but we knew something good was going to happen. It makes taking the jokes a lot easier.
So who came up with the concept of just having that name?
You know, I think that there was a conversation between the heads of this company and Neil Moritz, the producer, where this idea was floated, and it was the only title in all honesty that was discussed, and everyone signed up to it pretty much on the spot.
So you don't think you lost, I mean, it doesn't look like you lost money, but do you think there's somebody out there in a cave who didn't go because they thought it was a re-release of an old movie?
I have learned long ago never to say it's impossible, but if you shatter box office records by as much as we did on this film, I'm relatively confident we didn't leave any money on the table.
Adam Fogelson is president of marketing and distribution for Universal Pictures. Universal's film called Fast and Furious shattered box office records when it opened earlier this month. And that's The Business. If you have any questions or comments about the show, write us at thebusiness@kcrw.org. You can also listen to this or any past program, comment about the show, and engage with other listeners at kcrw.com/thebusiness. You can listen to our podcast, share it with a friend, or embed it on your blog with the click of a button from our new media player at kcrw.com. And you can always subscribe to the podcast through iTunes. Matt Holzman produced and edited today's program with production assistance from Ray Guarna. Our associate producer is Darby Maloney. Our theme music mashup was designed by beat architect Jason Grohman. The Business is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica. I'm Kim Masters, and we'll see you next week on The Business.